Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Hello. It is just me today because Zoe is off following her TV dreams. Actually, one of our followers wrote in and said that she manifested it on this podcast. And I think she did because it was one of her goals for the year. So amazing, like absolutely incredible for her. And I'm sure she is absolutely smashing it and we'll be able to watch it in a few weeks. So it is just me for the intro. But our guest today is, well, I think we'll all know her. She's worked in magazines for, I don't know, 20 years plus, something like that. She edited one of the biggest women's magazines in the world. In fact, she launched it over here in the UK. She's an absolute powerhouse and a fellow Thermomix lover, which I'm not biased, but I am, but that made me fall in love with her instantly. Today, we are chatting to the wonderful Jo Elvin.
Today's guest, former editor of Glamour magazine. She actually launched the magazine here in the UK. She left back in 2017, then she went to You magazine. Since then, she's been charity chief executive of Children with Cancer here in the UK. Mum to teenage daughter Evie, wife to Ross, it's Jo Elvin!
Yay! Whoa, that was a mouthful.
No,
we got there in the end.
Wife to Ross.
And did you like that?
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah, he's the most famous man I know on social media who has no social media. He's like the ghost.
Exactly.
But because of the hashtag clothes my husband hates, he's like, people are like, oh, you're the husband.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love that hashtag. I think that's how I dress. I dress in like the opposite of how my husband would dress.
What's the hashtag?
Clothes my husband hates.
Oh God, that's where everyone's going wrong though. You never ask your husband if they like what you're wearing.
Oh, I don't ask.
No.
The opinions are just unsolicited.
Oh, and they just come to you.
Relentless and and really disparaging.
But,
yeah.
No. But we don't care and that encourages us more, right?
Exactly. And sometimes I come downstairs and he'll say, "You've just put that on to wind me up." And I'm like, you know, yeah, maybe, yeah.
He's got no style. Yeah. He's got no style, clearly.
No, he's got a certain aesthetic that's his own. You know, he's just sort of like chinos and button-down shirt man. And I think that's what he doesn't like about the hashtag, because he says people think that I must be some sort of like real fashionista twat, you know, like, but he's not. So he doesn't like that, you know, that if anyone thinks that he's deliberately being mean when he's just teasing me.
Yeah, that's what I know. Yeah.
So apart from being insulted by your husband when you come downstairs in the morning, what is life like in the mornings now you have an adult daughter?
Well, my adult daughter, she'll be 19 in a few months now, but she's interning at the moment at a fashion house. And let's just say, like her mother, she ain't no morning person. So it's still that high school thing where we're dragging her out of bed. But she gets ready quite quickly once she's up. But yeah, so it's with that. We've got to fit in the dog walk and just get ourselves ready. But I prefer it to the primary school run years.
Now, so you have to drag her out of bed. So what age can we start getting a bit more sleep?
What is that like?
Because at the moment it still starts with a 5.
Yeah. When did it start with her? I would say about 13, 14. Maybe, you know, there was a time when she was probably up till about 10 where she was waking up, getting up, and then coming into download a load of crap at you, monologue style, for 10, 15 minutes. And then that stopped. But now, I mean, now she barely speaks to us. So, I don't know.
Grunts.
Yeah, basically. And I've noticed as well, since she's been working full time, she comes in, the door gets slammed. Hi, how are you? She just grunts at me. But then I've realized that, again, like me, she needs 5-10 minutes to decompress, to separate out there life versus in-home life. And then she, after that 10 minutes, she comes back downstairs and she's like a different person. Mm. Then she's nice to me. So, yeah.
We got lots to talk to you about today. I mean, one of the kind of big areas that we can't wait to dive into is actually having an 18-year-old daughter. And there are worries and the highs, the lows and everything that comes with that. But would you please take us back to your time over in Oz and then what brought you to the UK with Glamour?
Okay, well, back in the ancient history of the 90s, I don't know if any of you remember, I really wanted to work in magazines since I was about 12, 13, when I started to be obsessed with British magazines, pop magazines. I used to devour them all. They'd be months old because we didn't have anything like the internet or fast shipping. You know, they'd come out on a plane. I would save up all my money, walk the 5 miles to get them, come back. They'd be out of date, but I loved them anyway. Duran Duran, Spandau Ballet, Wham, Culture Club. They were all the big bands when I was a kid. And I used to love it. And then I started realizing that there were people whose names were on these articles and they were like getting to travel the world with all of these bands that I loved, hanging out with them, all these pictures, all this sort of thing. And I thought, okay, so I'll never be a pop star, but I could do that. And I knew that I could write. I knew I was, you know, they were the subjects I was good at school, anything to do with writing. So I figured out, oh my God, so I can use this, that I can write and I can possibly use that to work in magazines. And that was it. That was all I was focused on. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I could, I applied for all the university courses that would facilitate that. But I wanted to get an internship and I got one after months and months of cold calling around magazines. I got one at a magazine called Dolly, which was the big magazine in Australia, much like Just 17 here all those years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'd been there about 3 months.
How old were you?
Oh, 18.
Okay.
And I got there one day and, you know, I was going in, opening the post and answering phones and all that. And I'd written a couple of little bits and they were firing the whole features team when I walked in.
What a day to arrive.
I know. It was like, as the PA said, just go sit over there. It's already heavy. It's like, and the editor was standing over these two women packing up their decks going, right, you've got 10 minutes. Because they had tried to get her fired because they didn't like her. And that went about as well as you would expect.
Yeah.
So they went and out of desperation, they were like, Joe, do you want to write some stuff?
It's like you planned it, Joe.
I know. And I just never left. And I left my university course and went to work full time at Dolly magazine, which I did for a few years. And then from there, I wanted to come to London and see if I could work here. And somebody who I knew worked at Channel 10, big TV station out there, and said they need someone to work for 6 months on Neighbours doing publicity.
What a dream come true.
Well, it was all, I hated that job, but I knew that everyone over here was batshit about Neighbours. So
yeah,
I thought, okay, so if I get a job on Neighbours, when I get off the plane at Heathrow, it's going to be like, please, will you come and run the BBC? Do you know what I mean? That was sort of like the logic going on in my head. No one cared when I got to London that I'd worked on Neighbours, but it still looked quite nice on my CV. And then I just started applying for jobs here and got one. I was waitressing, I was doing bar work, and my first job here was as deputy editor of TV Hits magazine.
Oh my God, TV Hits.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
And I used to do sticker books full of Take That and, you know, go and interview East 17.
I
once gave Brian Harvey a massage on a shoot, although, of course, today that would probably be frowned upon.
Yes, it would.
But I offered because he had a headache.
Was this before or after he ran himself over?
I can't remember.
Left, he accidentally ran over his own.
No, I do remember.
I don't remember that. They were off. They were so sort of like, they were always, their whole thing, their whole shtick was to come in and be really bad behaved and, you know, all this. But I quite loved them. I thought they were quite cute. I thought the bad behavior was, it was just quite sweet because it seemed so panto to me.
100%. I had posted them all over my wall. That guy Tony from E17 was my crush.
Well, he was so moody.
Yeah.
He was actually a really smart guy. I mean, really talented. But they just, you know, they weren't as pretty as Take That. And I think that they kind of, as much as they said they didn't care about it, I think they did care about it.
Yeah, and so, they needed their thing, and it was to be like the bad one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, bit scruffier. Bit rough around the edges.
They were fun. I always had a fun day when I had to do stuff with E17.
Oh my God. Things that you know. Things that you know.
Oh gosh. So obviously we've been talking about your career. Did it ever kind of, it all seemed very planned out. Did you ever think about becoming a parent, or was it not really something you ever dreamed of?
I think I was one of those women who, yes, it was always like, oh yeah, someday. Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah. And then suddenly you're 35 and you're thinking, well, someday's kind of probably right now. I think I'd been married for 4 years and I got married when I was 30 and I started editing. I started at Glamour when I was 30. So it was a really weird time when like everything was new. I had that big project to get away. I had to have a whole team together. I had to deliver. There was a lot of pressure because there was a lot of money being spent by the company. So imagine, as much as we like to say women can have it all, no way could I have gone to my boss 6 months into that going, oh, by the way.
I want to start a family.
Yeah, I'm just pregnant. I said, okay, I'm going to take maternity leave just as we're launching, obviously I had to get that out of the way. And then I hadn't ever, I think a lot of people think more of it now, I had not given really any thought to fertility or whether or not I just started having loads more sex when we decided to do it and got pregnant really quickly, which I know for a lot of people listening, that would be bloody annoying and horrible.
But okay. That's your reality.
But that's my journey. Yeah. And I was very lucky, and I was not so lucky when we tried to have a second one. So and even when I told my boss, I was like 34 and I told my boss I was pregnant. He was like, oh, how old are you? And I said, oh, I'm nearly 35. He went, oh, you just slipped one in. Which he meant as, but it's true because I think that I was very lucky because then the next, when I was, after Evie was about three, so I was like 37, 38, and, I went to see the doctor, so it's not really happening. And they said, you can get pregnant, but not naturally. And I just wasn't up for it. I feel very lucky that I had my one daughter.
So you've got this amazing job. You're running one of the biggest magazines in the UK. And you think, right, I'm going to have a baby now. You get pregnant. Happiest moment of your life? Or what do you feel?
Oh, yeah, I was really happy. I think I was like, again, sorry to be so rudimentary about it. It was like, oh God, so that actually works.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, that penis works.
Yeah. It's like, and I remember just being very cautious. I'd known a lot of people who had not carried their very first pregnancy to term. And I was like, my husband was like, wow. And I was like, let's wait a few more weeks before we start getting really excited. But it did all. And I was excited. I couldn't wait to meet this little peanut. And obviously I was terrified out of my tiny mind as well. Mm. I don't know how to be a parent. Still don't know.
Neither do we. And what about when you were, off with Evie? Your life must have changed so dramatically.
Yeah.
And how was that for you?
If I'm being brutally honest, I didn't love those first 6 months. I loved her more than anything. You have that really horrible, weird, overwhelming feeling, don't you, that if you need to run in front of a truck for this kid, you will. Mm. But I found it quite isolating. All my friends here are people I've met through work because I came from Australia. So everybody else was at work. I didn't do the NCT group thing. When I tried to do that, the first group I tried to go to got cancelled because someone had a loft conversion and they couldn't have the NCT.
You were like, are these my people? The loft conversion people?
I kind of sensed not. And I'd already heard lots of horror stories about, everyone feeling shamed if they don't breastfeed and all this sort of stuff. So it didn't really feel like my gang anyway. It was the first time in my entire life, you saying, it felt like it was all planned. It was the first time in my life I felt, I just don't know what the hell I'm doing here.
Yeah.
Everything feels like I'm doing something wrong. Mm. I don't know why she's crying. I don't know what that rash is. I don't know if she's eaten enough milk. I don't, and I just, it was, and then she got colic. So,
oh God, so savage.
So then, my husband, who would be up all night because she was screaming all night, would go to work. And then the minute he came in, I'd sort of like throw her at him because I had had it all day. And he was like, excuse me, I've been at work all day.
Yeah.
So it was quite, we fought a lot and all that sort of thing. But then when she was about 5 months old, we took a big trip to Australia. And I remember saying to a friend of mine who's a psychotherapist, I said, she turned into like angel baby overnight. And he said, it's probably more that you had all this help and so you were calmer and then she was calmer. Mm. And then, because honestly, it's like then she turned into this clockwork baby.
Like, also, when they start weaning,
yeah,
just from what we know, limited experience of it, that does start, you know, their esophagus. I get medical here. Does something happen with their esophagus?
Something happens, especially if they don't take very well to milk. They want food. I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, she was always gorgeous and always cute, but it was, I remember somebody saying to me, the first 3 months, Joe, are just horrible, just to warn you. And, you know, it doesn't seem right to categorize it that way, but it was hard.
Yeah, of course. It's really great to hear you saying that, actually, because lots of people don't want to admit that.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to look a certain way.
I'm telling you, even when I was pregnant, I was buying those baby magazines. And I felt sick the entire time I was pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was keeping Zantac in business. I never threw up, but I felt dreadful the whole time.
I felt hungover. Yeah. That's the way I describe
like
it.
Like on a boat.
Yes. Mm. And, but then all these pregnancy magazines, like, you know, people's diaries and this is, I actually burst into tears when, it's week 16 and my skin is glowing and I feel more alive than ever. And I was still sort of like, and I was like, I never bought another pregnancy magazine again because I can't stand hearing this when it's not like that for me. So,
And did you have any friends around you that could support you during that time? Were you talking to anybody about it?
Yeah, a little bit. But again, they were all working, you know, and it's like everyone was like, oh, it gets better. Don't worry, it's always hard. And there's like just hearing that. And in fact, I think Mumsnet gets a lot of crap these days, but I did spend a lot of time like, you know, just like oversharing a bit on Mumsnet. And I actually found people really supportive and just sort of like, oh God, yeah, I just feel like dying. I'm really tired. Can't stop crying. All of that. And I remember my mother-in-law saying to me, do you think it's depression? And I said, I don't think it's depression, but I'm fucking tired out of my mind. So I'm probably a bit depressed.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was postnatal depression. I was just tired.
Mm. What about your feelings around not being at work? Because another, you know, really common conversation that we have is that grief that you feel that you're not the same person that you were. And leaving, or at least being on mat leave from Glamour, you know, how was that process for you?
I don't know. I think I was so excited about this new experience. I'd been doing Glamour for... it must have been about 5 years. Obviously, there were times I missed it. And, you know, it's like, it's a great, fun job. It's like, you know, it's fashion shows, it's parties. But I knew I was going back to it. And 6 months went so quickly. So I don't feel like I had time to miss it. I just was focused on my daughter. And I suppose I was really just trying to figure out in that very short window of time what life was going to look like as a working mum. So I was like really consumed with how I was going to manage all of that. I do remember that my first day back at work, you have all those really weird feelings, like you can't believe, you feel so sad about missing. I remember I did cry a little bit when I got home that night, and Evie sort of like, she looked at me so excitedly, little baby arms going out. I thought, oh God, really missed you today.
Yeah.
But I also really enjoyed finishing the first cup of coffee while it was still hot.
Still hot.
So yeah, it's like, so I decided, I think that when I'm at work, I'm at work, and when I'm at home, and I try to be focused wherever I am.
And that is amazing advice.
Yeah.
What about like I guess overall, how did you juggle your career and being a parent? I think we talk about it so much now, but this is like 18 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, were people having those conversations? Was it normal to have such a big job as, you know, a mum then? Like, how was it?
To be honest, it was. A lot of my contemporaries, like Lorena L, Alia Instyle, and a couple of other people like that, were also like around my age and having children. So it was quite common that one of us was sitting on the front row with a big old bump, you know, at that point. I think that I definitely felt that I had to just deal with that, and it was my problem. It was not my employer's problem. I didn't really ever discuss it with my employers what I was going to do about childcare. I think that's probably changed a lot, and you know, that's fine. But I don't think my boss would have had any clue what my childcare arrangements were, and I think that I'm really feel fortunate in that I'd worked hard. I'd got this great job, this great career. I was paid well. So I had that going for me. Mm-hmm. I also have an incredibly supportive husband who's very 50-50, very hands-on, very willing to say to his work, I've got to go and do the pickup, you know, and which is harder for men. Mm-hmm. Which is like, we don't like to say it out loud, but it's true.
Oh, yeah.
So I was financially in a position where I didn't have to be beholden to the regimented hours of nurseries. So I found a daily childminder who came to my house. I hate to say nanny because that's a really triggering word for a lot of people.
It's weird though, isn't it? Yes,
yes, I know, babysitter.
Yeah,
I go, yeah, I've got this great babysitter, but she's a nanny.
Yeah.
Nanny,
it's so weird.
Everyone starts thinking about the royal family if you say nanny, but you know.
I think people imagine someone in a uniform.
Yeah,
like in, I don't know. Like
with the old nanny McPhee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a big briefcase. Yeah. So
she would come to my house and she, you know, I always did my best to do right by her and tell her where I was going to be and be home at a good hour and all those sorts of things. But she was also great if I had to say, it's gone a bit wrong and I have to stay. So, yeah.
And did you have any parameters around how many hours a week you were working?
No. And also that job, I love that job so much that it never really felt like a real grind. I mean, yes, there were stresses and pressures and all those things, but I loved it. So I didn't feel like I was being held against my will at anything that I had to do particularly. Mm. But I think that it was also the kind of job where if I needed to leave at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I could still get stuff done later on if necessary. So it was always a bit fluid that way.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
One of the big things that comes up for me, and I know that George feels the same, is that we kind of want to have it all in terms of we want to be at every drop off and pick up. We want to be there for the doctor's appointments, for the parents. We want to do everything, but we also want to do this.
Yeah.
And we want to have our hearts set on fire by the jobs and the careers that we've chosen.
100%.
And it really, I mean, I'm getting it so much from my little one at the moment who's just like, you're always leaving me, which is, by the way, is not true.
How old?
He's 5.
Right.
And he just wants me all the time. And I desperately want to be there for him, but I can't make it work all the time. How do we fucking get our heads around
that? I know.
That?
Well, I just made a pact with myself that I had to just decide that that was going to be normal for her to see me go to work. And I had, you know, we had those things. I remember she was in the bath once when she was about 4 and she had this plastic toy duck and a smaller duck. And the little duck goes, Mummy, Mummy, stay. And the big duck went, no, I've got to go to work, and zoomed off in the water. And I was just like,
oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, the duck is me.
Do you know what?
I was like, oh, my God. But, and especially, and you will find this, especially you two do such great jobs and, you know, you're out there, you've got these amazing profiles, your kids will be really proud of you and they will see that you've carved your own life. Because yes, I had moments where she did not want me to go to the shows, you know, she wanted me to stay home, but it was 3 or 4 days at a time, you know. And now she, you know, I know that she admires what I've done. She always used to be really complimentary when she was older about, God, you know, glamour gives so many people so many great opportunities. She's met Taylor Swift more times than she's met Santa. So,
oh my God.
You know, it's
You've
kind of all worked out for her.
You've got to take the rough with the smooth, haven't you?
Dead on. Because nobody gets everything they want in this life. And, you know, I was earning my own money and now she wants to do that. So,
Did you ever feel judged from anyone at the school gates or anybody around you?
Sometimes, yeah. But I mean, really, I think that sort of stuff gets too much airplay. I think that you have to give people permission to make you feel like that. So I never did. I've never felt guilty about being a working mum. Never.
I love that from you, Jo.
I mean, never. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's like,
how do we not feel guilty?
I don't know, because women are really good at it. Because I also know a lot of I was very, very lucky at my school is that I had a fantastic year of school mums and dads. I'm still friends with a lot of them and they're not even at school anymore. Mm. But the stay at home mums always used to feel guilty that they, you know, I had stay at home mums say to me, well, but you know, my daughter just thinks I'm just crap and a bit boring and I've wasted my life, and it all, you know, and so everybody kind of like imposes those judgments on themselves when everyone's just doing the best they can, you know.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
It was actually more when I was pregnant. It used to really annoy me. Like, people would say, oh, you won't want to go back to work after you've had the baby. Yeah. And I say, oh, no, well, A, I'm going to have to. So mm-hmm. I hope I want to.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, you wait. I know. And then it used to really annoy me because I think, well, okay, so what, am I just the worst person in the world now? Because I don't feel like that. I don't. Mm. I want to go back to work. Mm. So yeah.
I do think that the narrative has changed a lot, and there is so much more support around whether you choose to stay at home and look after your babies forever until they leave the nest, or whether you choose to go back to work after however much time. That whatever is your norm now seems to be more supported.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
but
is
I,
great.
And I love what you say about when you're at work, and when you're at home, you're a mum.
Yeah.
Because I think actually the last few years, I think that's what so many parents have been struggling with.
Yeah.
This flexibility is great in so many ways, but it's almost like there has to be flexibility with work with boundaries, because I found it really tough when I was working at home, seeing the kids at home while I'm trying to work.
Yes.
And it actually, that's harder.
Well, that's actually why I do prefer to go somewhere when I'm going to work.
Mm.
Exactly that reason, because there's just no separation at all. And that makes it really hard. And so, you know, when my daughter was on school holidays and I was at home, you know, she'd just come in and start wanging on to me about something. I'm like, I really can't talk to you right now. And then she'd be annoyed.
Yeah.
If I'm not there, she doesn't do that.
She has to wang on to no one there. So it's fine. It's easier. We'll talk about it later.
Exactly. Yeah. So, no, it's never easy. One thing I would say is that I think, who was it? I think it was some actress the other day said that Sarah Jessica Parker was saying that actually your children probably need you more as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember at the time when she was about 5 or 6 and going to school and having all the new school friendship dramas and all that sort of thing, I used to think, actually, maternity leave when they're infants is probably a bit of a waste compared to, you know, it's like when they don't really care who's changing their nappy or, you know, doing the rattle and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
But when she became a teenager, that's when I would get the teary calls about this or that. And that's when I'd feel worse about not being there, because you've missed the moment when you can talk to them and help them with something.
Mm. And also, you have a real opportunity to teach them whatever you want to teach them at that point. When they look up at you and say, but mummy, why do you work? I really feel when I'm looking in my kids' eyes at that moment that, yeah, okay, I could say it's because we need the money. But also at that point, I want to say to them, because I love it.
Yeah, but and I do. I did used to say that. Yeah,
and I do. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's really important.
And it's good when they get to understand. I remember, because, you know, I used to go away for the shows all the time, and it was great when she got to an age where I could show her some fashion shows on videos and say, look, there's mummy. Look, there's, you know, sitting in there. You know, she's like, oh, okay, that's what you do. You know, and then it makes more sense to them.
Yeah. You just touched on the teenage years.
Yeah.
I want to know, but I don't want to know. Talk to us about what it is like raising a teenage girl.
Oh, it only gets worse. It only gets worse.
Now you're joking, right?
No. Look, it's great. We were saying earlier, I'm going to the theatre with my daughter tonight. It's really good. Mm. She wants to go to drama school. She's very invested in theatre. She knows a lot about it. And we see films and productions together, and we have really great conversations about it. You know, I find her very funny, very smart. She's my pal, you know.
Yeah.
And that's really lovely. I don't want to go into it too much because, you know, it's her life, it's her privacy. But, you know, it's she was diagnosed with ADHD during her GCSE year, and it took us ages. It took us until during exams to figure that out. Mm. And suddenly all these emotional problems that we've been having made sense with her. And, you know, so now she's even just being able to get her that diagnosis gave her a bit of a released a pressure valve, was she, because she was thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And there's nothing wrong with you. You're just neurodivergent, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we've been through a lot of ups and downs with that. We have had a bit of the mean girl stuff, the sort of like the falling in and out with friends. And I just, all I can say is it's interesting because I went through all of that when I was a kid.
Mm.
And it's just as painful, if not more so.
Oh my God.
When you're watching. But everything passes as well. But and it's the same when teething, toilet training, sleepless nights, it all feels like this is your life forever when it's happening, but it never is. So
somebody's mean to my kids.
Oh, it's horrible.
I cannot handle it. Yeah. And I want to cry and I want to rip the person's head off and the kid's head off. But I get it. It's survival of the fittest. It's the animal kingdom in a way. Like they have to figure it out.
They do. And you're actually, you know, obviously bullying and like really, really abusive behavior is one thing, but yeah, we don't do our kids any favour if we just make all conflict and all issues go away.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wait, you just said that you called your daughter your pal.
Mm.
Have you always had that relationship or has it developed into that?
It's definitely developed. We've never not got on. My mother and I, when I was a teenager, had not a good relationship. You know, it's just very volatile. I think we're just too similar.
Mm.
We've never had, she and I, the door slamming, sort of like screaming, estrangements, anything like that. But you know, she has her moments. She's a hormonal teenager and there are times when I have to say, you know, do not speak to me like that or, you know, or you've had to be firm with her or whatever. But I don't know, I think, and something else we'll probably touch on, I wonder if it's because she's an only child. So she's only got us in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that she's very, very good at in adult situations. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I can take her. We went to a book launch last week for my friend Kat, and she is absolutely fine. I mean, she's 18 now, it's not a child, but she has for years been very, very good at holding her own in adult conversations. And I just think that, I think growing up in that quieter only child house, it does mean that, I don't know, she's had my attention, she's had my focus, she doesn't have to fight for my attention.
Yeah.
So I think that it's just made us have a very sort of like even-keeled, reasonably calm relationship. Mm.
Did you ever experience any of the comments around only having one child?
Oh, constantly. I've written about it a couple of times. It used to infuriate me. No one believes me, but I actually had a woman say to me, it was a distant colleague, we were all in New York for a dinner, and she actually at one point said to me, I mean, really, I believe it's a form of child abuse to have one child.
Stop it.
And it was just because I was on my third glass of wine that I didn't really react. I just was like, I was just sort of like stunned. It was only the next day. I was like, God, I can't believe that's what she said that to me. But I was just like, I mean, it's just revolting, isn't it?
Did she say what her reasons were for that at all? Did she say because of the...
Something to do with, you know, the usual things like when you're old and dying, they won't have anyone else.
Or how can you do that to them because they won't have anyone to play with?
Yeah, all of that. I didn't play with my bloody three siblings, so, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, there was a lot of that, a lot of it's selfish, it's cruel.
Oh, my God.
My God.
She'll be horrendous. She'll be really spoiled. All of that.
Yeah. Can I just say, I love being an only child.
Well, I think she does as well.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a few things, like, I feel quite responsible, like, in terms of my parents. But I don't know. I mean, that is a small thing.
You have an amazing relationship with your parents. Now, that might not be down to the fact that you are, you know, the only child, but they're completely dedicated to you and vice versa. And they're incredible with your kids. Amazing.
And I mean, you know, I'm very mindful that I will not let the fact that she's an only child imprison her to us. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I will make sure that she can live her own life and she doesn't, you know. So I don't know. I just, all of that, I find it absolutely extraordinary. And from people who you'd think, well, you don't know. You have no idea. I may well have just miscarried. And you're saying to me, oh, you've got to have another one.
It's criminal you haven't.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's no one else's business. And I just, it is extraordinary to me that people would. And somebody told me, well, you know, it's not a proper family if it's one.
Oh my God. I actually think it's your really
beautiful
sensible.
Family.
Pardon?
I think it's really sensible. I'm always like, sensible people have one child.
Well, there is that as well, you know. I mean, I would not have had any of the nice holidays I've had with one more kid in tow.
My mum always says, my mum's like, we had a completely different life. We just had a child with us at the time. Like, I didn't go to Chessington. I went to restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, it's just different.
But
like,
also, the thing is that you're not commenting on anybody else's family setup and saying, oh, God, how can you have had three? Why would you want three? Well, and all three children are sitting there going,
to be honest, though, I have a friend who has four children and she did get that. When she was pregnant with her fourth, people were like, oh, you know, that's so environmentally terrible.
This is the other, yeah.
And it's so that's selfish as well, apparently.
Yeah, you can't win.
You can't. So just everybody, just wind your neck in and let everybody get on with whatever their life is doing, really.
Joe Elvin for PM. Joe, you're coming.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no.
You wouldn't want to do it?
No. Charity boss is thankless enough. So, yeah.
Well, you're coming to another crossroads in your life.
Yes.
Talk to us.
Well, yeah, I've been. Children with Cancer UK is an amazing charity. It's 36 years old. They've raised hundreds of millions of pounds. They've literally changed the landscape in lots of ways for the good for children with that disease. There's a long way to go. I was brought into try and make it a bit more famous, modernize it, get more celebrity eyeballs and more supporters on it. And I feel like I've done what I wanted to do. I'm still going to be involved with it, but I just feel like, you know, I'm sort of on this, I don't know, maybe it's just a midlife crisis. I'm just on this journey of trying to figure out a life that's a bit slower, a bit more balanced is what we all want. And I think that again was another full throttle job, and I'm ready to hand the reins to somebody else, but then just be there in the background as, you know, as a sounding board and consulting. Yeah. So it's kind of the best of both worlds for me, because I love the charity. And I the thing I was really scared of when I agreed to take the job was meeting sick children and their families in anguish. That was the thing that I was like, I don't know if I can handle that. But honestly, those people, they get on with such challenges with such unimaginable stoicism and grace and pragmatism, and they've taught me a lot, and I've fallen in love with so many of them, and that they're the thing that kind of make me think, oh, this is why I do this.
Mm. So, has it given you a new perspective?
Oh, God. It just can't not. It can't not. I will never, ever again moan about getting old or, you know, or anything that any day-to-day stuff. The things that I've seen young children grapple with just matter-of-fact resilience. It's so humbling. I haven't even got the words, really. So, yeah.
But after a couple of years at the helm, it's time for new pastures.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're going to do yet, which is exciting.
I'm sort of like keeping my hand in broadcasting, still working with them on a big project that we've got going on at the charity. I need to go and see my family. I haven't seen them since pre-lockdown. So, you know, I want this to be a year of lots of variety.
Yeah. You've got your podcast.
Oh,
my God. I forgot about that. Yeah. Oh, you were teeing me up, but I forgot.
There you go.
What a promo genius I am. Thank you very much. It's called Fame, and I'm fascinated. I saw this research, read it somewhere a few years ago, that fame alters the chemistry of people's brains. And it was just really, of course it does. And I heard Taylor Swift doing an interview years ago where she said that she sometimes wakes up in the morning with a really sore face because in her dream she's been grinning on red carpet, sort of like, and that's the kind of, this is the thing, it's the only sort of thing
that's jaw dropping.
Yeah, but it's only what a famous person could do. And so I just thought, it's interesting to me, like even the people who say, oh, fame hasn't changed me. And there are some people who walk through and they're still down to earth, but it changes everybody around them as well. Mm. So I just wanted to talk to people about how they arrange their own relationship with their fame in their own heads. So wow. We've had some amazing people. We had Brian Cox, Jamila Jamil, Amy Schumer, loads of people. And they've the stories, like Jamila telling me that she used to wake up and she'd obviously been sleepwalking the night and got dressed for a red carpet event in the night and would wake up like, why am I wearing this?
Oh, my gosh.
It's just a stuff that only famous people experience.
You just mentioned that your daughter's really into the arts and stuff. Would you want that for her?
Well, I want her to do whatever she wants to do. At the moment, she's I think particularly things like acting and performing, they need a certain creative, sensitive soul to them. But it's also so brutal in terms of rejection and taking things personally. So I do, you know, back to what we're saying about people being mean to our kids, it's like my heart would be out there going to auditions. So I don't love it, but this is what she wants to do. I think she's definitely destined to do something creative, whether it be theatre or television. Yeah. So whether that's behind or in front of the camera, I don't know. But that to me seems to be where she's naturally going in one way or another.
You're not going to be like Kris Jenner, the Mominger.
I'm not clever enough. I'm just not clever enough.
I mean, come on. I think you are.
I'm sure she'd love me to figure out. Although, you know, I certainly wouldn't be encouraging anyone to release a sex tape or anything. So, yeah.
Did wonders for them, though.
It really did, didn't it?
It didn't. Even just like a small blowjob tape. I'm not talking about your daughter here, right? I often think about it.
What, releasing your own?
Well, maybe. It's just done so well for those girls, hasn't it?
Well, I was like, you know, we were talking, a friend of mine the other day, we were talking about OnlyFans. Well, no one has to know it's our vaginas.
You could put your feet on it. Yeah. Well, you don't have to do vaginas. You put feet.
Yeah.
People, I reckon I get 5 messages a day. Go on, get your feet out.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not used to people kind of knowing who I am or anything like that. I'm usually very much, you know, behind the desk. And we did something together. And I started getting messages saying, can you please gunge Zoe Harper?
Yeah, there's a gunge guy who's obsessed with it. I can't work it out if it means jizz. Does he want to jizz on me?
I know this is a podcast, but I'm speechless. I've just got...
Or does he want to put me in a gunge tank like on Pat Sharp's Funhouse?
Well, what's the price?
I mean, if there's a price attached to it, I'm
sold.
Usually
in skinny jeans as well. Can I watch you gunge Zoe Hartman in skinny jeans?
It's very early 2000s.
That is the other thing. And I was shocked.
Well, you didn't arrange anything with him, though, did you?
Well, you know, how do you think I got my fancy new stuff?
I have definitely had worse jobs than that.
I know, right?
So, yeah. I mean, okay.
Well, let's see what the price is for 2024. Yeah. Joe, before we say goodbye, the best piece of advice that you've ever received in the parenting sphere? Or give a bit of advice to a new parent listening.
I think for me, the thing that still centres me now is parent the child you've got. You can read all the books, you can say, but they're not doing this, they're not progressing, they're not just, you just look at who's in front of you and get to know them and work with that and help them. Don't get obsessed about this kid who can do that or that kid who's better at this. Just who is your child and just concentrate on helping them to be them.
I love that.
Now, we always ask our guests about products. So this does not have to be parenting products. This can be stuff that you absolutely swear by.
That we need in our lives.
You love. Yep. Anything that you love or that your daughter loves. Like what? Do you have a tracking device on her?
No.
Some people do. Yeah. You know, anything like that. What are your absolute must-haves?
Oh, God. So that you see, if my husband and daughter were listening to this now, I am the least techie person.
It can be clothes, like a brand that you love, or makeup products, or
just stuff in your handbag you're always carrying around with you.
Well, I can't do without lip balm. I've literally just went and bought a new Carmex.
Because
I look like the Joker in lipstick, so it's lip balm. The other thing, a couple of years ago for my birthday, I'm obsessed with my Peloton.
Oh, awesome.
Which is very privileged of me, I know. But that is the thing. That's changed my life because I no longer have to look presentable to get to a place to work out and then rearrange myself. So I'm obsessed with that. And then my husband for my birthday a couple of years ago bought me a Thermomix.
Oh, my God. Georgia's got one.
I love it.
But I remember the poor man sort of said to him, why the fuck did you buy me this?
Yeah, fuck.
And then about 3 weeks later, I was like, oh, my God, this thing is, I want to marry this.
Yeah.
I want to marry the Thermomix.
I'm so glad you were saying this, because Zoe thinks I'm mental.
We could have gone to Ibiza for 2 weeks with the money.
Yeah, I know, but think of the batch cooking, Zoe.
Oh, my God.
Think of the restaurant quality risotto that's just coming at you.
But you got like, surely you've got like a pan for that and a hob.
Yeah, but you...
Can you do that in a pan?
Look, we all know that I only do 50.
It's like a game, isn't it? It's like it's like a game, Fred. It's like, okay, put this in, put that in that, and it slices, it dices, it bakes, it sautés.
What is this witchery?
It's a kitchen robot.
It's a robot. It's a robot.
How much is it?
Unbelievable.
I don't know.
$1,300, $1,400.
I think
it's not cheap.
Yeah, it's not cheap, but it's worth the investment.
But if the Gunge guy pays me a lot of money, I'll buy one.
I'm telling you, I would just
okay.
Just
I think especially for you. Because Zoe hadn't had a fried egg till this year. No, this year or last year.
Last year.
Phoned me, right? And I answered the phone like, hi, Zoe, you're right. Oh, my God, have you had a fried egg? Yes, Zoe. I've probably had a fried egg when I
What a time to be alive.
Oh, my God, you just put butter in a pan and then crack the egg and it's done. Yes.
Up till that point, I'd had poached, scrambled, you know, but fried egg, it takes half the time and actually it's a taste sensation.
Well, just, you know, just take it slowly before you graduate to boiled.
I don't want to
blow your mind. Okay,
And the Thermomix can boil an egg for you.
Okay, so I'm sold, guys.
Yeah.
Joe Elvin, you absolute legend. Thank you so much for coming on. Come back and see us soon.
I will, thank you.
Thank you.
See, a Thermomix friend. I actually never have anyone to talk about that with. And I know there was so much more in that episode. And so, like, it's so interesting when you hear guests who have been through what, you know, what we're going through now, and then the teenage years, and then, like, her daughter started to work, and just all this stuff that we don't think of. And, yeah, I just find it really interesting to, like, hear of the struggles, but also, like, she was going out that night with her daughters in the theatre, and just how much we actually have to look forward to as well. Yeah, absolutely loved it. Thank you so much, Jo. And if you've got any feedback on this episode, then obviously do drop us a DM. We're on Instagram, we're on @MadeByMummies, and this is usually Zoe's line, but I'm going to step in today. Please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast, and give us a 5-star review, and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mummers is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.